Thank you for joining the Zen Care podcast. These recorded Dharma talks are given freely to our community in the heart of New York City, which we are honored to now share with you. New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care is dedicated to transforming the nature of care through contemplative practice by meeting illness, aging, and death with compassion and wisdom. Learn more about us through zencare.org.
So the last of the 16 Bodhisattva precepts not speaking ill of the three treasures is in many ways how the precepts just circle back to the beginning. The first three precepts are the three treasures, the three refuges. So we begin there, beginning this year, of really learning how to look and cultivate an awakened mind, the Buddha mind, to take refuge in the Buddha mind, moment by moment. Noticing when you're not participating with where you are. Without shame or blame. And the Dharma, to take refuge in the Dharma, is to take refuge in receptivity. To allow everything to teach you something. It's so easy to judge and to push away. I don't know if any of you have that ease in judging and pushing away. It's so easy to make another person a villain. The other person not quite right intends to be a good way of making excuses to not connect, right? And the Sangha treasure to really take care of community in your thoughts, words, and actions. That's all you have to do. In all your thoughts, words, and actions, consider how you're nourishing or killing community. So this last precept is really saying, remember, wake up, that this is really foundationally about cultivating your awakened mind, receptivity, and community. And don't disparage that. Because that's so easy. The precepts are so great because they're just reminding you about how easy it is to distance and to separate. I think I told you about, you know, so some of you know Ronnie, right, from the residence. And he was saying that great story. I was asking him about, you know, how is everybody doing? And it just really makes me think of this precept. And he said, I love the Zens. They're all so sweet and well-meaning. But, you know, sometimes it would be nice if they meditated with me, offered a prayer. They all like to play the video game. But they're all so sweetly shy. So to me, that's also part of how we, you know, are on stinginess of this precept. Of really learning how to really widen out our Because if you go in thinking you have to do something, what am I going to do? He's not talking, I got to do something. How do you just like take a breath and ground yourself so that you can maintain the three treasures? Sound of the ambulances when other people are kind of not letting them go because they want to go where they want to go. Anyone ever been like that? Locked into your position. I want to go where I want to go. And we get to hear this attention to that kind of detail. And sometimes they're just like flowing. To me, we have to learn how to be really intimate with our fear. To really know what we're most afraid of. In Zen, we talk about actually maintaining fearlessness is actually just welcoming death in each moment. There's a story I love so much where, you know, in feudal Japan, you know, an army would come through and just kind of kill everybody. In a particular village, when the army came through, they, you know, went to the temple because they heard about there was this very interesting Zen teacher there at the temple. And he asked the teacher to come see the general. The general asked for his audience. Come see me. And the teacher didn't come. So he very angrily went there to the temple and was like, who are you to not, you know, come see me? I've taken over your village. Don't you realize that I could cut your head off with one stroke without blinking an eye? The teacher just looked at him and said, but you don't realize I wouldn't blink an eye with you doing that. I'm not afraid. Of course, it's kind of an extreme story. And yet the heart of it, I think, is not extreme at all. Learning to actually have no fear, which is to welcome your fear and not believe it, to feel your anxiety and not play into it, is essential for intimacy. It's essential for maintaining the three treasures. To do your habitual thing is easy. To do something new, to extend out beyond your comfort zone, which is a continual process that you never arrive at, to me, is how you maintain this peace. The willingness to keep open. I often think of our teacher, you know, in her 89th year, still investigating and willing to go anywhere within and without. And not afraid to be afraid. And not afraid to investigate. once had a great Zen teacher named Gudo, and the emperor of China, asked him, what happens to a great person of enlightenment after death? How should I know? Said Gudo. And the emperor said, well, you're a Zen master. And Gudo said, true, but not a dead one. Staying intimate with what your experience is. Like the anxiety that some of you have about this ending. Who knows what's going to happen? I don't. It's amazing having anxiety about the future. From the ground of being, the whole universe has no inside or outside. So in the basic ground of this practice, there's no inside or outside. There's no me and there's no you as the base. Others are ourselves. And we ourselves are others. Everything is fully manifesting itself just as it is. In other words, everything is perfect and complete, lacking nothing. There are no mistakes. Yesterday was the end of our chaplaincy training program for the year. And one of the group members offered an opening meditation. It was quite beautiful, about really considering all the things that brought you to this point, as if you could ever imagine. And I found myself really considering the perpetrators in my life. My personal life. People who have inflicted violence. And realizing that there's no mistake. Because of them, I am me here. For sure. I was thinking also about my family and the pogroms that they experienced that are very difficult for me to imagine. That led some family members to leave, and most of them were killed. And then my other side, where they were actually killed mostly by neighbors in the Holocaust. But because of those neighbors, I'm also here. It's very moving to me to really consider how much hatred, and you could say of not maintaining this precept, has informed me appreciating this precept so deeply. And what is it like to not wish that things didn't happen? But to realize that everything that's happened is perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And this is a way of maintaining the three treasures. me, it's a really radical shift. And if we really take that on, we can't blame anyone. No problem. An easy practice of taking total responsibility for everything. No disparagement, which is different than not holding people responsible. People are still responsible. But it's a very different thing. We don't blame them. So the literal aspect of this precept is don't speak ill of awakening the Dharma and community. Don't do it. In a very literal way. The relational, which is so much also that undergirds our work at the bedside, examine yourself as the three treasures. To speak ill, or even to think ill, of oneself, which used to be called low self-esteem. Remember that? To have those thoughts about yourself is actually to revile the three treasures. Kind of it. What does that do? To take on that viewpoint, to really talk about poor me, and nobody knows the trouble I've seen, our special suffering, is actually to revile the three treasures. I love that word, revile. That turns up the heat. Like, it's no joke. And the intrinsic, or the absolute view, there is no difference. Period. From the view of one, the one body. So how could you possibly disparage anything? There was a young woman who wanted to be a fencing master. And the master looked at her and said, "Who did you study with before?" And she said, "I've never studied before." The master looked at her in an odd, quizzical way and said, "No, Shirley, come on, you've certainly studied with someone." And she said, "No. I've never studied." Well, then the teacher said, "I'm a very experienced teacher. And I can tell at once by looking at a person, which you can do, right? Whether they have studied fencing or not. And I know you have." The young woman shook her head again and said, "I assure you, I've never studied fencing." "Well," said the teacher, "there must be something peculiar then about you. do you suppose that might be?
Well, the young woman said, when I was a girl, I was very worried about dying. So I thought a great deal about death. And then I came to the realization that there's actually nothing to be afraid of. Oh, said the teacher, that explains it. So that quality of fearlessness, which means to be deeply intimate with fear and really thoroughly investigate it. And you can kind of feel that. I feel like this is the most important quality, maybe, that we can walk into the room with, to be at the bedside. And you can feel who is really intimate with their fear and who is walking in. That gives a very different feeling of having this like deep grounded ease. And to me, this is the heart of maintaining the three treasures. So really to have a mind that is constantly investigating the awakening process, which is never done. I'm certainly not. Being receptive and community, having strong roots in community and nourishing them. All you have to do. Consider what it means to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And how is it that you believe your conditioning and not doing it? Because we all do. If anyone's free of conditioning, I guess this is not a conversation for you. And Maizumi Roshi, the founder of our lineage here in America, said, you know, was fond of saying, just use all the ingredients of your life. To be awake at the bedside and intimate in the rooms of the living, welcoming everything in. To me, the way that with the medicine is to just really be able to be fully present. That's like a popular thing, to be mindful. But what the hell does that mean? What are the ingredients of that? How do you really cultivate a mind of exquisite attention? How do you allow yourself to cultivate a mind of exquisite attention? I was talking to someone this morning about, you know, the Shekhinah, which I had never really thought of it in this way until we had this conversation. I'm talking about the Shekhinah as the Shabbos bride who comes. And she's so embedded in time. And so like the Shabbos or relaxation or the ease is also a practice, a discipline. That you have to really be in time to receive. You have to really be rooted in yourself to receive what's happening, moment by moment. No problem. All you have to do. Or as our teacher always says, all you have to be willing to do is surrender everything. All your sense of separateness and how you're so reinvesting in your separateness and your difference. We don't usually have to reinforce our difference. I think we're all super good at that. But how do we nourish and support each other in allowing for more connection and intimacy? To me, that's the great question, just to keep in front of us for at least a lifetime. So I'm going to end with a poem that rocked my world when I was 16. And continues to. And it was during a period in Rilke's life where he was quite depressed. So depressed that he went to see a friend who he asked for advice of what to do. And his friend said, well, I'll only give you advice if you actually do what I say. I'm not interested in giving you advice and then you just saying, I'm moving on. And Rilke said, okay. So he asked him to go and sit in front of things, including wild animals, statues, and spend like a day with each thing. That kind of attention and focus. So this is called the Archaic Torso of Apollo. We cannot know his legendary head with eyes like ripening fruit. And yet his torso is still suffused with brilliance from inside. Like a lamp in which his gaze now turned to low. Gleams in all its power. Otherwise, the curved breast could not dazzle you so. Nor could a smile run through the placid hips and thighs to that dark center where procreation flared. Otherwise, this stone would seem defaced beneath the translucent cascade of the shoulders and would not glisten like a wild beast's fur. Would not, from all the borders of itself, burst like a star. For here there is no place that does not see you. You must